I have no relevant financial relationships. I wish I did, but I don't. So I'm going to talk about a training that we developed in Pennsylvania and Philadelphia on religious competency in public health. How do I progress my slide? There we go. Okay, so a little bit of background. I'm going to talk through the slides. I have a problem when I have to upload slides a week early, which is that I think of all my great thoughts really like the night before, and you don't allow to do that anymore. So we developed this training about religious competency really in the framework of cultural competency. We've all been hearing the phrase cultural competency for years, right? This right here talks about how the Office of Minority Health defines cultural competency, congruent behaviors, attitudes, and policies that enable effective work, integrated patterns of human behavior that include language, thoughts, communications, and basically competence applies to our ability to have the capacity to function effectively as an individual and an organization within cultural beliefs, right? So we've been working within that framework for years. One of the other things that OMH talks about in terms of cultural competency is it's as a main ingredient in closing disparities in healthcare, right? Without good cultural competency, we cannot deal with issues around health beliefs and practices and cultural and linguistic needs of diverse communities, whether it's doing clinical management or public health. So the interesting thing, though, is that while in public health, we've engaged faith communities, and we know there are faith communities, we've engaged faith communities in outreach and education, we haven't done a lot in sort of flipping the tables and looking at religion as part of cultural competency. So I have said many times in the last year, we have no problem asking people all sorts of questions about who they have sex with, how they have sex, what kind of drugs they do, how they do those drugs, what drugs they do while they're having sex with who. We're fine with that. But we have not yet as a society, I think, forgetting about public health, gotten comfortable saying to someone, do you believe in God? Or do your beliefs in a certain religion influence what you do around your own health, around the health of your children? We hear, you know, the big bad stories around people that withhold medical care for their kids. But many religious stereotypes abound that we get uncomfortable with. People adhere to certain religious traditions that have an impact on the type of health practices that they engage in for themselves and for their families and their communities. And sometimes religion comes right in conflict with public health messages, and we haven't, as a public health profession, really, I think, stepped in to kind of face that head on. Preliminary findings from the 2010 U.S. Religion Census estimates that 48.8% of the U.S. population is adherent to some kind of religious denomination. And as for those of us that live in areas that are seeing a lot more immigration, that's happening more and more. And the scale and the types and the diversity of religions is also really increasing. So that was kind of the backbone to what we did. Our training was really also not just about developing a training, and that's what training centers often do. We develop trainings, we train the public health workforce. That's part of our legislative purpose. But the other part of our legislative purpose, and what we really believe strongly in, is developing collaborations and partnerships. So what we set out to do is to both develop a training around religious competency, but to develop some partnerships that could be sustained beyond the delivery of a training with the Public Health Training Center, entities within the School of Public Health, and our main partner was the Interfaith Center of Greater Philadelphia, which was a diverse religious organization that was actually founded after September 11th to try and promote better cross-religious understanding within the Philadelphia area. I should also point out, because this is really critical, is that one of my faculty colleagues in the Department of Community Health and Prevention is a rabbi and has spent much of her career working on the intersection of religion and faith. So this was a real important thing for her. And I say that because, you know, these things, we talk about what can you replicate and what can you do anywhere and everywhere. That was a key piece, that she really wanted to do this and came to the training center and said, hey, can you help us do this together? So it was a long process, and I will say that I am not a process person. So I was like, yeah, this sounds great. Let's do this. Let's get it out. Let's roll it out. 3 months. Okay. And everybody looked at me and was like, no, we have to develop a partnership. We have to talk. It took a long, long time. It took about, this says April 2011 to June of 2012. It was actually, we started having the original conversations, I think, 6 months before the official planning started. It just took a long time. It took a long time to get a handle on what the religious picture was in Philadelphia, what religions we wanted to cover, who our partners were going to be, how we were going to do, what was the best way to deliver the material and the curriculum. It just took a long time. We also used panel members from different religions, and that took time to identify them, recruit them, train them on public health and the Public Health Training Center goals. So it was a long, it took a while. It was worth it, but it did definitely take a while. So we finally put on the first training in June of 2000. I think I was 2013, but it was 2012. And we did five religions: Seventh-day Adventist, Judaism, Catholicism, and the Hispanic community, Santeria, and Muslim. And we picked those really based on our partnership with the Interfaith Center and what they kind of thought made the most sense. And we tried to do a mix of kind of what we called mainstream religion, right, Judaism, Catholicism, and some emerging faiths, and faiths where, particularly Santeria, where there were a lot of stereotypes, and people were like, oh, that's voodoo, they do all sorts of weird, crazy things, so we wanted to have a mix of that. We then chose a panel of experts to represent each of these different religions, and there were a mix. We had some people that had a real clinical focus. We had some that were more community-based and public health-focused. So we had a mix of panelists who worked with us on this training. It was facilitated by my colleague, friend. We had panelists give a short introduction, a little brief piece, sort of about their religion, some of the big take-homes and what some of the big myths were about that religion that they thought impacted health. And then we had participants break into small groups and work through some case studies. And that was really the meaty part of the training, was we gave them each a case study about a particular religion and a set of sort of questions that they had to answer and sort of figure out what would they do in this situation while our panelists kind of worked the room and answered questions. So again, the case studies were really the backbone. We did two different types, some that served on individuals of a certain faith and a clinical decision making they might have to do, and some that talked about serving a particular community that was geared a little bit more to the public health audience. We did this as an open enrollment training, so it was a really diverse group of people that came. Each case presented a scenario and a kind of a question, and we asked four basic issues. What are the issues to be addressed? What questions would you want to explore to do that? What's our best sense of the way to move forward? And what resources would we want to be in touch with? Because what we really wanted people to do is, you know, you're not going to, in a full-day training on five different religions, walk out an expert on any. But we wanted people to at least leave with some sense of, gosh, what would I do and who might I call or reach out to if I needed some help? So this is just a quick summary of one of the case studies. They were actually much longer, but it's just an example. So you have a 23-year-old Jew who was killed, trying to figure out what to do with organs, whether or not there's an autopsy to look at genetic diseases. The shooting took place right before Shabbat, so they had to figure out funeral arrangements. So that was just kind of one example of what the different case studies were. They were actually much longer. Some of them were a little bit more involved. These slides are tiny, I apologize. So we worked through this thing, the evaluation. I'm not going to go through all the details, but really the evaluation asked questions about to what degree people had a better knowledge of their other faith traditions, felt more culturally competent to address these religions, and had developed relationships and better understanding of what to do. I will say this, that, and those of us in the Training Center program know this, you know, you do an evaluation at the end of a training, usually if you've done a good job, people know a lot more, and they feel a lot more competent, they feel a lot better. And that's great, but what we're really trying to get at and we're working on now is, so 3 months later and 6 months later and a year later, has their practice changed? So we did a six-month, we don't have enough people to do a sort of a formal six-month evaluation, but we've done a six-month sort of contacting people by email and trying to get in touch and ask some of those questions, and we're about to do a post 1 year evaluation of the same thing. Because that's really what's going to make the difference, is at this point now, when you are talking to someone, do you now ask them questions about religion? You know, do you do it all the time? Do you do it some of the time? Has it changed your practice? Again, these are just some of the other evaluation slides on what the different understanding was of the different religions, and the percentage of participants who feel more prepared to interact with a particular faith. I mean, this really was geared at getting people just more comfortable with the concept of religion and faith as they talk about other things. So some of our future directions. We realized several goals that we set out to. One was obviously responding to the workforce needs in the region by creating a public health workforce training to increase religious competency in the workforce. We developed this partnership between the training center, between our faculty within the school, and within key leaders within the faith community with interest in public health to think about this intersection as we move forward. We laid the groundwork for the next training, which is actually happening in 2 weeks. We're doing Buddhism, Hinduism, Baha'ism, and Sikhism, which we got those from a combination of surveying people at the end of the first training and then getting, again, some feedback from our colleagues at the Interfaith Center. And then hopefully we've just opened further discussion about religion and public health. There are some people who thought, particularly, I will say, some of our colleagues in government public health, for who this made people uncomfortable. I mean, and I think that happens. When we get federal dollars and we think about federal money and we think about separation of church and state, people get nervous. And that's good, because right when you get nervous, then you start the conversation. So I've had some interesting debates with people who said, why are you doing that? Are you allowed to do that? Someone actually said, you're allowed to use HRSA dollars to do something on religion? So it's been interesting to try and just open up that conversation. So implications for public health training centers. This, again, it's not an off-the-shelf training. It's not sort of an intro to EPI that you could kind of package. We partner with the University of Pittsburgh for the Pennsylvania Public Health Training Center, and a lot of times we share our products, and this is one you can't share. It's not an off-the-shelf because it's really dependent upon local demographics, religious diversity in your own community, and leadership and what the need is and what the partnerships are. But there are a lot of things that we found are replicable, which is the framework that we use in terms of using collaboration. I would never recommend that any school of public health or training center on their own try and do this. You really need the partnerships with the faith community and being able to bring in panelists and people like that to do it. The way we did it with case studies, I think, was great, using a mix of didactic and group exercises and evaluation tools. And then the other piece is that we really, again, we viewed this as an ongoing collaboration development of a curriculum rather than a one-and-done or a two-and-done training. So we're hoping that now we'll do another one in a couple weeks and then really start thinking about what our future work might be in terms of religion and faith and the work of training for the public health workforce.